So tonight is actually the first of a four-part series on the Book of Ruth. You can take one out of the box there. The idea is that it's actually going to be a rotation of presenters. So four different talks from four different people from the Beit Midrash, which I suppose is a good thing in that you'll get different takes. On the other hand, it means that we can't really go for continuity. With me doing one part and then someone picking up on the next one.
Different perspectives, same discussion.
Exactly, different perspectives on the book. My take is going to be one, and then someone else will come in with something completely different, and this way we'll get some of the 70 different aspects of the Torah. But we're always glad to do programming with Shari Tefila, this is just another example of what we'll be able to accomplish. So, having said all of that, the topic I want to talk about is, as you see at the top of the page, the balance of chesed and din in the Book of Ruth. Chesed is kindness, generosity. Din is
obligation,
justice. Din is justice. It's a term
it's actually law. It's justice.
It's more justice than it is law, interestingly, when you go into the etymology. Meaning that din, as an Aramaic word, is actually logic. Mm-hmm. So and so it appears, I believe, my Arabic is rusty, but I think in Arabic as well is more of that sort of a meaning. And we tend to use it. It's true that we have tended to take tzedek more as a justice separate from the specific law, as opposed to din, which is more, we take more as a court function. But we'll see how that plays into Sefer Ruth Megillah Ruth, I should say. But I want to open with a comment made by the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon has a commentary on a Tanakh called Aderet Eliyahu. So far.
We can pass the sheets down there?
Yeah.
That's great, thank you. So, Aderet Eliyahu is the Vilna Gaon's commentary to Tanakh. It includes commentary to the Chamesh Megillot. His commentary on the Book of Ruth actually doesn't extend through the entire Sefer. But in the beginning, he presents us with a comment which gives some insight into the workings of the Sefer as a whole and its connection to Shavuos, because of course the reason why we like to learn Ruth at this time of year is as a build up to Shavuos, when we'll actually read it publicly in shul. I assume that is the minhag here?
Yes.
Okay. I once had a friend who became a rabbi in a shul where they did none of the Megillot, only Megillat Esther. They didn't do any of the other ones. So I shouldn't take it for granted that people do it. But in order to develop the idea that the Vilna Gaon presents, I want to look at a medrash. But in order to look at the medrash, we need to know the pasuk on which the medrash is commenting. So there's always a previous step. There are prerequisites in life. Take a look, please, at source number one, a pasuk from Mishlei.
What page are you on?
I'm not in the book.
Oh, are you in the page?
No, we're not in the book yet. We'll get to the book, God willing, but we have a ways to go before we get there. We're only 3 minutes in. The source number one is a pasuk from Mishlei, from Proverbs. The way of man, I gave you the Hebrew and the English, the way of man is contrary and strange. That's not about anybody in particular, I should note. That's just a general statement. The way of man is contrary and stain and strange, but a pure person's deeds are just. Okay? People often are contrary. They do the opposite, perhaps, of what they ought to do, and certainly of what you tell them to do. But a pure person's deeds are just. So, the Medrash at the start of the Medrash on the Book of Ruth uses that pasuk. In general, the Midrashim on the Megillot start with what is called a pesichta, or petichta, depending on how you choose to pronounce it. It's a set of opening comments that will give us insight into the Sefer as a whole. So this is from the Psichta to the Medrash on Ruth. Rabbi Acha said, the way of man is contrary. He quoted that that pasuk that we just read in source number one, but we are now in source number two. If you could pass this down, please. Thank you. The way of man is contrary. This refers to the Jews. As it is written, they are a contrary generation. That's not the worst thing we've ever been called. It's also not the most inaccurate thing we've ever been called. The way of man is contrary, those are the Jews. I then, having ellipsis here, if you look at the Hebrew, you'll be able to see the entire text. It just wasn't particularly germane to the point here. That's why I didn't translate it. But Hashem declared, they are the descendants of stubborn people. I cannot eradicate them, Hashem says. I cannot return them to Egypt. I cannot trade them for another nation. All options Hashem considers for us and rejects. What should I do? I will punish them with suffering and temper them with hunger in the days of the judging of the judges. And that, of course, is the opening of Sefer Rut. Vayihi bimei shvat ha-shoftim vayihi ra'av ba'aretz. So Hashem says, I can't get rid of them. I can't destroy them. So I guess I'm just going to make them tougher, and I'm going to make them tougher by having them go through hard times. So how'd you like a little famine? That's what Hashem presents us with. That's a remarkable decision there. And so the Vilna Gaon wanted to understand what exactly it was that drove Hashem to this. What was it that made Hashem decide that the best policy would be to toughen us up, to give us a hard time and kick us around a little bit? And the way the Vilna Gaon framed it is that Hashem has two major opposing means of interacting with human beings, and indeed with all of creation. One is called chesed, which we've defined as kindness or generosity, and the other is din, law, justice, however, whatever variation we choose for this, it'll basically be on the mark. And he associated it with two different names of Hashem. We have a variety of names for Hashem. We understand a name to be a descriptor of the type of person, entity being named. So when you use a name for Hashem, it isn't simply a label, but it's actually describing Hashem's traits. One name that he chooses is the name that we is the, it's a four letters. We don't usually pronounce it. Yud, Hey, Vav, and Hey. And that's a name that's associated with chesed, with generosity, with mercy, with kindness, all the things that we're really looking for. But the way he plays it, this is the way the Vilna Gaon plays it, is that it's about unlimited giving. Unlimited, undiscriminating, simply giving. Whether a person is good, whether a person is bad, no matter what your deeds are, no matter what your promises for the future, Hashem says, I'm going to give. That's the name, Yud, Hey, Vav, and Hey, and that's the name that Hashem wants to use in dealing with us. Then, the flip side is the name of Din, of justice, and for that he applies the name Shin Dalet Yud, pronounced in its correct form as Shaddai. We usually render it as Shakai, so as not to say this name of God. Where does that name appear? Where does that name appear in daily Jewish life?
The mezuzah,
right? The outside of the mezuzah. What is that doing on the outside of your mezuzah?
Well, Shomer Daltot Yisrael.
Right, so they take it as Shomer Daltot Yisrael. Hashem is the guardian of the doors of Israel. I don't take that as pshat, but I take that as a nice thing. Hashem guards the doors of Israel. We put that on the mezuzah that's right there on the doorpost. But the name itself is a contraction, we're told in the Gemara. Take a look at source number 3. On the pasuk where Hashem identifies himself to Yaakov as Shin Dalet Yud, what is the meaning of I am a God? And then that name, the Shin Dalet Yud name, what does it mean? So the Gemara explains, Hashem says, I told the world enough. Mm-hmm. Well, what in the world does that mean? So Reish Lakish explains. Reish Lakish, one of the sages, said, when Hashem created the sea, it expanded until Hashem rebuked it and dried it out. The sea would have covered the earth, but Hashem said, Adkan, only to this point. and he dried it out, he put a halt to it, like we say in Tehillim and in Eov, various places in Tanakh, Hashem establishes a limit for the sea, as it is written, he rebukes the sea and dries it, and dries up all of the rivers. They quote a pasuk there from Nahum. So then that name connotes limits. Hashem saying, this is your limit. That's din. Hashem saying, I'm going to give you, but I'm going to give you in measured amounts. That's part one of this, is that those are two attributes of Hashem in the way he deals with us. Part two is that we need these traits as well in the way that we deal with others. We need to display chesed sometimes and din at others. Take a look at source number four, and this is a part of the Vilna Gaon's comment. He says, rendering it in English here, anybody want to read? Let's read. Go for it, please.
And so a person must have these two traits, chesed and din, meaning for that.
Sorry.
Divine, is that what you want me to read?
No, I want you to dump the first four. It's my mistake.
First four?
Dump the word four, that's all. Meaning that for divine matters.
Oh, meaning that for divine matters, he must use chesed to ascend even higher without limit, and to be involved only in Torah and services. For physical matters, for eating and other matters, he must use din and not the fulfillment of his desires.
Right. When it comes to doing the good things, when it comes to doing fulfilling the Torah, when it comes to my own act towards others, use chesed, be unlimited. When it comes to the way I'm going to govern myself in terms of my material desires and the like, I'm supposed to employ din. And the Vilna Gaon takes that and connects it to the mezuzah. What name of God appears on the inside of the mezuzah at the very beginning? Shema Yisrael, Hashem, the name that we associate with chesed, with giving. The yud, hey, vav, and hey. That's the name connoting generosity. That's the inside. He says that's like the neshama, the soul of the person. When you're dealing in spiritual matters, chesed, be giving, be generous. However, the name on the outside, right, the shin, dal, and yud, limits, because that's talking about the guf, the body, the physical. He says you have to put a limit on how much you're going to eat. You have to put a limit on the way you engage in your material needs. What in the world does this have to do with Rus? We're going to come back to that in 1 second. But first, one other note that he makes. Take a look at source number 5. Regarding giving the gift to the Kohanim that they're supposed to receive. V'ishes kadashav lo yihyu, the pasuk says. A man's holy items will be his. When he gives it to the Kohen, it belongs to the Kohen. Says the Vilna Gaon, a man's holy items will be his. If you keep the items that you're supposed to give to the Kohen, then that will be yours and nothing else will be yours. But if you give it to the Kohen, then much will be yours. Then you will have. Then it will be his. You'll have a lot. A person who keeps for himself that which he should have given is only going to have that minimal amount. A person who gives away that which he has to give to others will end up having a lot. And that is what the Vilna Gaon uses to bring it back to this Medrash. He says, when the Medrash says that the Jews were contrary in the days of Ruth, what it means is that they warped their chesed and din. Instead of being generous to others and being strict with what they kept for themselves, they were generous to themselves and strict with what they gave to others. You know, I know people who, when the Meshulach comes around, right, someone comes around collecting for tzedakah, so he says, okay, I'm going to give. I have a specific budget, and I can give you whatever it is, $5, $10, $18, whatever it is. I have a very strict budget, and here's what I can give you. And then, when it comes to himself, he splurges. You know, I think I'd really like that plasma TV. I'd really like that, whatever it is. And then I'll spend a lot. I feel like I need to go to a restaurant. I need to go to the game. What the Vilna Gaon is saying is that that's the reverse. It's supposed to be that I have a rigid strictness for myself, what I'm going to do for myself. And when it comes to the mitzvah and to helping others, that's where I'm going to splurge. And the Jews are the reverse in the days of Ruth.
Can I ask this question?
Yes.
In a particular situation, like you give an example of,
yeah,
does that individual, whoever it may be, not have the obligations of the charity that he's given to his children and for their schooling and everything else?
Of course he does.
Okay, so those obligations are, in fact, he's constantly giving.
Yes.
So this is excess giving to, yes, the maximum. At what expense?
Right. So
okay,
if,
so
right.
I mean, the fact is that you can be inundated with many people coming all at once, and they don't take into consideration what the local support is. And even though we have it set up that there's a third of what you're supposed to give, up to 10%, at least a third has to go to your own community. In this case, your own community happens to be your children, because you're only obligated to them for 6, and everything else is deductible. Right? So there's
according to Shach. Okay. According
but
to Shach. Others put it longer.
No, these are just things.
He's pointing out that the calculation when the Mashulach comes to your door is not so clear-cut and not so simple, and we have obligations for tuition, and we have obligations for all sorts of support communally. All true.
Okay. I'm just saying that it's not that these people spend so much on TVs or anything else. What they're spending is on different types of charity.
Right.
Okay, so really, the community does give.
I'm not saying the community doesn't give. I'm only saying that the guy who worries about...
And every Melech's time we're talking about a guy who didn't want to give to his community, period.
Maybe. Those who are so quick to defend themselves should also be quick to defend Eli Melech. The point is not in any way, shape, or form to talk about what one should give a Mashulach. I gave the Mashulach as an example only because it's one that we can relate to easily. The point is only that we should be very careful to make sure, and this is what the point that he's making here regarding Ruth, that if we're going to apply very strict standards on what we give to others, we better make sure we're applying strict standards to what we spend on ourselves. The response from God, and that's what's being recorded here in the Medrash, is to reverse it on us. He says, if you're going to splurge on yourself and be strict in giving to others, then I'm also going to be strict in what I give to you. And that's what leads to the famine in the beginning of the book of Ruth. That's where the famine comes in. Vayihi bimei shvod hashoftim, in the beginning of the book, right? If you can open it up, you've got them in front of you. Vayihi bimei shvod hashoftim, it was in the days of literally the judging of the judges. This is the judgment that's taking place. Hashem is in fact judging, and he says, I'm going to give you a famine. Vayihi ra'av ba'aretz, and there was a famine in the land. This idea of din, of justice, not justice, of judgment, and of strictness, plays out in general in the beginning of Sefer Ruth, in the beginning of the book of Ruth. If you take a look on your sheet at source number 6, this is a classic medrash. Remember the story. If you remember the story, a family from Beit Lechem goes to live in the fields of Moab. Him, his wife, and his two sons. Him is Elimelech. His wife is Naomi, and the two sons are Mahlon and Kilion, which, by the way, I really hope were not their names from birth. What does Mahlon mean? Anybody know? Sickness, right, sickness. What does Kilion mean? Destruction. Destruction. You name that? You name your kids sickness and destruction? In the sense of the book, and in the context of the book, the point is, these are two people who don't have long to live. They're going to make it, 3 psukim into the Sefer. But I would hope that Elimelech and Naomi did not actually name their kids Mahlon and Kilion. It doesn't bode well. I can see the rabbi at the bris saying, you sure about that? Maybe there's somebody else in the family you want to name them for. But take a look at source number 6, and we're told why Elimelech did this. Why was Elimelech punished? Says the Medrash. He caused the hearts of the Jews to fall. Elimelech was one of the leaders of the nation, the supporters of the generation. And when the famine came, he said, now all of Israel will come to my door, each with his collection box. He rose and fled from before them. He said, I don't want to be the one who's going to be responsible to support the entire population. I can't do that. And so instead, he leaves. But not only does he leave, not only does he take everything with him, but look where he goes. Where does Elimelech go?
Moab.
What do we know about Moab?
People of Lot.
People of Lot, yes. More than that?
He was. They denied us food and water when we came to Eretz Yisrael.
Bingo.
And they wouldn't sell us anything.
Bingo. But more than that, where does Moab come from? Lot. and his daughters, right, from the city of Sodom.
Right?
Sodom, which is certainly not known for its benevolence towards strangers. And then there's another story associated with Moab, and people often miss this. Who sent Balaam to curse the Jews? Moab. Why did they send Balaam? What was the trigger? What were they afraid of?
About being what they did to the Jews in the first place.
What is it that Moab is afraid of?
They're being sold out.
Sorry? Moab is not afraid of destruction. The Jews are under strict orders not to go to war with Moab. Not only that, Moab does not live in the land of Canaan.
They have merit.
Take a look, please. Thank you. At source number 7. Vayomer Moab al Zikne Midyan. Moab says to the elders of Midyan, now this nation will lick up our entire environs. That's a pretty good translation, eh? That's my own. As an ox licks up the greens of the field. Moab is not worried that we are going to kick them out. Moab doesn't live in Israel. They don't live in Canaan. They're east of Canaan. Moab doesn't think that we're going to go to war with them. Moab is worried about their resources. These Jews are going to move into the neighborhood. They're going to consume our resources. Let's go hire Balaam to curse them. Moab does not know how to share. Right? I'm used to thinking that way with my kids. They don't know how to share. And take a look on the flip side, side two. That's the pasuk you were referring to. Lo yavo amoni moavi b'kahal Hashem. Ammonite and Moabite shall not enter the divine community. Even the 10th generation shall not enter the divine community forever, because they did not greet you with bread and water when you left Egypt, and because they hired Balaam ben Beor from Petor Aram Naharaim to curse you. They wouldn't give you bread and water. The problem with Moab is a lack of generosity, and this is the place to which Elimelech runs. Not only is he abandoning his brethren, but he's going to the people who won't give you a dime. That's what Elimelech has chosen for his associations.
Why should he have chosen them? That's not very good for him either. He wants to be somewhere where he can take, but they're not going to give.
So that's interesting. Does he really want to take?
I don't know. But you figure a guy like that, right?
See, there's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avot that describes four different traits of generosity, right? And one of them is what's mine is mine and what's yours is yours. And another of them is what's mine is mine and what's yours is mine. And the trait in that Mishnah that's identified as the trait of Sodom is not the one that says all mine. It's the one that says what's mine is mine and what's yours is yours. That's Sodom, and that's Elimelech. Elimelech is not interested in taking from others. He's a law-abiding citizen. He just doesn't want to give.
So, wouldn't it be more appropriate for Sodom to be what's mine is mine, what's yours is mine too?
No, that's exactly the point. They're not takers. They're just not givers.
So there's something that's worse than the stone.
Apparently. Well, the Mishnah there thinks so. It says Russia for the other one.
The stone more Rishon.
Right. But that's the nature of Elimelech, and that's what comes to him then. The din comes to their family. Mahlon and Kilion die in short order. The family and Elimelech dies, and the family becomes impoverished. And Naomi recognizes it. If you take a look, please, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Yud Gimel, chapter 1, sentence 13. She says to Rus and to Arpa, Halahin te saberna ad asher yigdalu, are you going to wait until they get older? I gave it to you on the sheet also. They didn't know whether you would have a Rus in front of you. But are you going to wait until they get older? If I were to have kids that you could then marry, right? How long are you going to wait for them? Halahin te agena levoti ayos leish, you're going to wait, you're not going to get married? Albinosai, no, my daughters. Ki marli ma'od mi kem, which is a phrase I want to come back to in a minute. But she says, Ki yas abi yad Hashem. The hand of Hashem has come against me. She says, this is din. You know what we call what she does here? Siduk hadin. Saying, the law is just. What has happened to me is fair. If you jump again to Pasuk Chaf Aleph, sentence 21, she says it even more explicitly. She says, I left with full hands. Hashem returned me empty-handed. Lama sikrena li Naomi? Why do you call me Naomi, which means pleasant? Vashem anavi. Hashem has oppressed me. Vishadaye Rali, and Hashem, she uses that name, the name that the Vilna Gaon identified as the name of judgment. Hey Rali has done evil to me. Hashem has harmed me. She uses the name of Chesed and the name of Din. That's what has happened to me. There's a particularly interesting note that the Vilna Gaon makes on this as well. When she says, Mar li mikem, it's bitter for me from you, she says to her daughters-in-law. Take a look on your sheet, please, source 14, at the Vilna Gaon's short note on that. Yesh li tsar gadol, al shani ro'a b'tsar shalachem. I feel great pain when I see your pain, she says to them. Naomi is somebody of chesed. She sees somebody else suffering and she can't stand it. But in this book, when the chesed kicks in, the din ends. The chesed starts with Rus. Right? Take a look at Perek Bet, Pasuk Bet, chapter 2, sentence 2. Identify the chesed there in that pasuk. Vatome Rus hamoaviyah el Naomi. Rus says to Naomi, Rus, not just Rus, Rus the Moabite, who comes from the people who don't give. She says to Naomi, El chana hasodeh, I'm going to go to the field, va'alakata vashibolim, and I am going to collect in the sheaves, achar asherem tzachein be'enav, when I find favor in the eyes of some farmer, va'tomer la l'chi biti, and she said to her, Naomi said to her, go my daughter. How many different kinds of chesed are going on in this sentence? What is Ruth doing for Naomi? No, what is Ruth doing for Naomi?
Oh, we should let her go.
Yeah,
what is Ruth doing? What is
she's
the daughter
gathering
doing?
Food for Ruth.
She's gathering food. What else is she doing?
She's
looking for her husband.
I don't know if she's looking for
it. No. What is Ruth doing for Naomi? She's doing something else besides the financial aid.
She's trying to cheer her up.
In a sense, I suppose. But there's something else.
She's willing to do the begging for her. Humiliator.
Exactly. She's saving her pride.
Okay.
Right? Naomi was the wealthy woman in town. Naomi now is going to be the one to go around field to field and beg. Ruth is helping Naomi also to save face, which is huge. And Boaz, in turn, performs chesed for Naomi and for Ruth financially, and then in marriage. We know the story. You don't need me to read through the story with you.
So he does it in a way that doesn't embarrass him.
Right.
He says to the workers, just leave something. He doesn't walk over and hand her something to embarrass him in front
of
the other workers.
Very good. So she's actually receiving sort of in a response in kind. She saved Naomi from embarrassment, and now she won't be embarrassed either. Good. Those are the sort of the obvious elements of chesed. Two elements of chesed in this book that are not as obvious. Number one, take a look, please, at, you can do it on source 14, or you can look in the Sefer Perek Gimel, chapter 3, sentences 9 and 10. Look at the conversation between Rus and Boaz. Vayomer mi'at, this is when she goes to him in the granary. So Boaz says, Mi'at, who are you? Vatomer, and she said, Anochi Rus Amosecha, I am Ruth, your maidservant, uforasta kinafecha al amoscha. You should spread your shelter upon your maidservant, kigo el ata, because you are the Redeemer. Meaning you're supposed to marry me, right? That's the idea. Vayomer, and he said, Brucha at Lashem biti, you are blessed to God, my daughter. Your latter generosity is even better than your earlier generosity. What was her earlier generosity?
Not humiliating her brother.
Right, taking care of Naomi in terms of her pride as well as in terms of finance. And what's her latter generosity? He fills it in the rest of the sentence. Not to go to the young men, whether poor or wealthy. The fact that you're willing to come to me, Boaz. We're taught that Boaz is 80 years old at this point. We don't know Rose's age, but it's somewhere south of that. The statement is, you're doing me a favor. Now look at that carefully, please, and tell me who is helping whom.
He's raising up his status. Raising up his status, isn't that?
Well, I mean, she's marrying him despite the age differential. It's one of those May-December deals. What else?
He's not embarrassing her.
He's not embarrassing her, right?
Just go away at night, but we should see you here on the threshold.
True. Right. What's fascinating to me here is that each sees the... Yeah, sorry? Each sees the other as the benefactor. Ruth sees Boaz as the benefactor. Provide me your shelter, right? She's asking him for help. And saying, you're the one helping me. And Boaz comes back and says, you're the one who's being kind to me. Yes?
Then why all this game? I mean, they all live in the same village.
Yeah.
Naomi came there. She could have just said, let's go for a walk. Knocked on his door and said, can we have some tea?
Right.
And let's talk.
Right. So why not? Why doesn't that happen? Good. But why doesn't that happen? You tell me.
I'm not that smart.
You're smart enough to ask the question. You're smart enough to answer it.
She's embarrassed about her.
So has there to be a procedure to be followed?
Well, there actually is a procedure because of the problem that we identify that he's not the first in line.
But they don't know that. Because Naomi doesn't send her anywhere to the other guy.
Well, there's a reason Naomi doesn't send her to the other guy. Because the other guy's not Boaz. But we'll come to that in a second. But I think it's the embarrassment. I think it's the shame and the fear that he's going to say no.
People said Naomi's come back.
Yeah.
So the word must have got to Boaz that he was in town.
You ask it. So the question is the other way. Why doesn't Boaz go to her?
He didn't call and say, you need some help?
And what's the answer based on what Boaz says right here?
He didn't want to embarrass her.
He figured out to go after a young guy?
Yes.
Leave him alone?
Yep. Boaz figures, I'm 80 years old. She's going to go for some young guy in the neighborhood. Neither one of them thinks that they have something coming to them. They both recognize that the other is providing a kindness. Is providing a chesed, to go back to the word from the beginning. As for Ploni Almoni, right, that's another one that's not his real name. Ploni Almoni means?
Somebody.
So-and-so the widower. So-and-so the widower. An almana is a widow, an alman is a widower. Ploni Almoni is so-and-so the widower. That's the way he's identified here. Like Machlon and Kilion, likely not his name from birth. And Rashi asks, why in the world is he named Ploni Almoni? And the answer is, as Rashi says, because look at the story. He's the one who's supposed to marry Ruth and take care of her, and he declines. He says, well, it's going to affect my estate and what my kids are supposed to get because now I'm going to marry her. And the Medrash fills in also, he's worried about people who are going to challenge the validity of Ruth's status as a Jew. So he says, I don't want to get involved. And so Rashi says, source 13, V'lo nichtav shemo l'fi shalo ava ligol. His name is not recorded because he did not agree to redeem. So Ploni Almoni will not perform chesed, and his name disappears. Boaz and Ruth both perform chesed for each other. Okay, so we've seen the Vilna Gaon's thought on chesed and din interplaying in this sefer, right? The idea of the people of the time not engaging in chesed, and therefore Hashem bringing a famine out of din. That's point number one. Point number two, we saw the way that din plays out in Ruth, the side note of them running away to Moab of all places, and we saw Naomi's acceptance of that, of the din, and then we saw the chesed kicked in. Good. But the key point that I wanted to make sure to get to is why this is particularly appropriate for Shavuos of all times. Why should we read this on Shavuos? I would have expected that we should read it on Sukkos. I would have put this book on Sukkos. Because after all, Sukkos is the time when the farmer has everything inside. Everything is now in for the winter. Now let him talk chesed. Now let's have him talk about giving to other people. Yes, it's true, Shavuos is also part of the harvest process. He's bringing the first fruits. That's also true. It has a legitimate claim to it from the harvest aspect. We also have other reasons why we read it then. There's the genealogy of David HaMelech at the end, and David HaMelech passes away on Shavuos. I'd rather read it on his birthday than on his yard site, nonetheless. I think he's one of those who we say is the same day anyway. But there's much more going on here in associating Rus with Shavuos. Take a look, please, at source 15. Look at this Medrash. This Medrash bothers me no end until I come up with an answer. Now I like it. But until then, it bothered me. This is talk about Moshe on Har Sinai. We are familiar, largely, with one version of this Medrash that appears in the Gemara in Shabbos. Remember the story in the Gemara in Shabbos? Moshe goes up, the Malachim don't want him to get the Torah, and they fight with Moshe for it, and Hashem says to Moshe, answer them, and Moshe says, well, what's written there? I am Hashem who took you out of Egypt, and he says, did you angels do anything in Egypt? And so on, proving the Torah is written for us. That's one version. That's the Gemara in Shabbos. The Medrash here gives a completely different story. The only common denominator is that the angels don't want us to get the Torah. It says, at that moment, the ministering angels sought to harm Moshe. Hashem shaped Moshe's face to appear like that of Avraham. And Hashem said to the angels, are you not embarrassed before him? Is this not the one to whom you descended and in whose home you ate? Hashem then turned to Moshe and said, the Torah was given to you only in the merit of Avraham. I don't understand this story. I have four questions about this story, but first I want to know, what are your questions about this story? This story should bother you.
Abraham has a circumcision, right?
That's true.
And he goes out, and these two angels or three angels come by, and he goes ahead and he runs after them.
Yep.
Because he wants to do the act of kindness.
Correct.
And his act of kindness is embarrassing to the angels because they're for another purpose, to destroy.
Well, some of them. Some of them are there to eat by Abraham.
Right, and then some of them are, and they all eat by Abraham.
Right.
So they are collectively a group, and they're seen as a complete group.
Okay.
Okay, so they're not distinguished, and Abraham makes no distinction between them.
That's true.
Okay, so for that alone, he appears to be as the nation, because we're the nation of Abraham.
But it's
a fact that we don't distinguish between the kindness that we give out.
True, but you're overthinking it. This is I have basic questions on this Medrash. Yes.
God invites Moshe up to heaven.
Yes.
How come the angels have the right to harm Moshe?
Yeah, who gave the angels the right to have any conversation here at all about who's going to get the Torah and who's not going to get it? That's a good question in its own right. Not to mention, why are they losing the Torah just because we gain it? I mean, what does that even mean? That's its own problem. But
what's the harm?
Maybe they don't want to share.
They didn't want that Moshe should get it in the first place because that's the whole purpose of the Torah, to give it to human beings, not to angels.
Or so we would think. So we would think. More than that. More than that. What connection is there between the fact that they ate in Avraham's home and now they should forego their right to the Torah? I don't even understand what that means. If I go to your house for Shabbos lunch, right, and then you come over to my house and say, I'd like your vase. Now I have to give it to you because, after all, I ate in your house?
Maybe they made
what kind of a trade is this?
He thought they were just a bunch of Arabs walking along the way.
Also true.
And yet he was nice to them. He was kind to them, and he gave them good food.
And therefore, when he goes over to their house, he can pick out whatever he wants and say, now give that to me?
Maybe this is a relationship.
Say that he's a nice guy. Why can't he just make up a painting of him? Why does he change his face?
Yeah, changing his face is a little bit extreme. Huh?
What about it's a religion?
What?
It belonged to the angels. As soon as the Torah was created, it belonged. It was set for the Jews, not for angels.
True. More than
that.
More than that.
Maybe they're challenging.
Let me ask you a question. Moshe doesn't have any merit.
No, the Jewish people don't have the merit.
But Moshe. Moshe doesn't have any merit. But splitting the sea, you know, Makos, all those other things don't count. It's Davka. Well, apparently not, because Hashem says to him, the Torah was given to you only. He uses the word only. Ella. Ella bizchus Avraham. Only in the merit of Avraham. That's why you're getting the Torah, Moshe. Moshe, you could be anybody. I could have picked Dothan and Aviram and sent them up the mountain to get the Torah. As long as I have the merit of Avraham, that's good.
How about, because Moshe prayed for them. Because Moshe prays for them, for the Jewish nation.
That's after this.
I understand that. But the fact is that God could have made a nation out of Moshe himself. Okay, so because he doesn't take that particular stance any time, he goes ahead and basically says that this is the nation of Abraham, not Moshe.
Maybe.
Okay, so that could be one possibility.
Could be. Could be. I have more questions. I'm not done with the question. You're giving me answers, but I'm still building questions. Take a look, please, at source 16. Gemara Bava Metzia about that visit to Abraham's tent. Rabbi Tanachum Bar Chanilai said one should not vary from local custom, right? When in Rome?
Do as they do.
Right? Nice Jews shouldn't do as the Romans do, so maybe that's how they might go on to Rome, but that's not the point. One should not vary from local custom. Moshe ascended to the heavens and did not eat bread, right? We're told, Lechem lo chal, mayim lo shasa, he didn't eat bread, he didn't drink water, fine. And the ministering angels, these Malachi Hasharis, descended below and did eat bread. Meaning, when they went to visit Abraham. To which the Gemara asks, do you think they really ate? What are you trying to tell me? The angels ate in Abraham's tent? They actually developed a digestive system? Rather, they appeared to eat and drink. They appeared to eat and drink. Who were the three men? Michael, Gavriel, and Raphael. Well, I now have additional problems. Right? Michal, Gavriel, and Raphael are not the ministering angels, the anonymous ones, who are challenging us about the Torah. Why do the anonymous angels have to give us the Torah? Because of chesed done by Avram to three other angels. That's number one. Number two, they didn't even eat. They didn't actually eat anything. So it's not as though they benefited from Avram's hospitality. What are we talking about? So because we're a little short on time, because 7:50 is Mincha, I want to get to one answer, not to the exclusion of other answers, but just this is what I have. It's Hashem's love for Avraham is predicated upon Avraham's willingness to, number one, perform chesed, and number two, to train his children to perform chesed. Because he wants to pass that on to the next generation. Go all the way back to creation. Adam and Chava were given one key command. Right? Don't eat from the fruit. What is Adam and Chava's job in Gan Eden? They have an active job. To look after the garden. If they could eat from everything in the garden, including that fruit, they would have no experience of selflessness. Their job of work the garden would be work the garden because you're going to get to eat the fruit. Plant asparagus so you can eat asparagus. Take care of the trees so you'll have fruit to eat. Right? Everything is about themselves. They're given one fruit for which they're told, don't touch that. That way, when you work for the garden...
Don't touch that.
Don't eat that, thank you. Yeah. We already had that problem. Fair enough. The message is... Here is something you're going to work for that's not going to be for yourself. You're going to work for that fruit and take care of that fruit, not in order to help yourself, but in order to help something outside yourself. You're going to have chesed. And of course, they end up eating it, which defeats it, and there's no chesed. So they get kicked out of the garden. Then you have the growth of Hamas, of people taking things by force, until Hashem says they're just not getting it. And he eradicates civilization, and says, Noach, you're going to learn the lesson. Because you know what you're going to do for the next year? You're getting an all-expenses-paid trip as a zookeeper. And you're going to have to take care of everything. All the animals, all the everything on the Teva, your job's to take care of them. And Noach does. He learns chesed. He spends a year practicing chesed. And when he comes out, he shows he's learned the lesson by taking the animals and not eating them, but giving them to Hashem instead as a karban. And Hashem says, aha! Human beings can learn something. This is wonderful. They can grasp the idea of chesed. I guess I won't destroy them again. And he makes the bris, the covenant, and says, good for humanity. But there's a catch. Because Noah doesn't pass it on to his descendants. As a matter of fact, if you take a look at the Medrash in Source 17, we don't have time to read it inside, but you have it there. You can take a look at it. Noah actually delayed having children because he figured that they would become like everybody else. It's only Avraham who says, I am going to be a person of chesed and I'm going to pass it to my kids. Pasuk in Source 18 is the proof. Hashem says, I have loved him because he will instruct his children and his household after him and they will guard the path of Hashem to perform acts of righteousness and justice. Because he's going to do chesed, and because he's going to have his kids do chesed. And that is what makes Hashem select Avraham. And the proof of it, the Medrash in Source 19, when Avraham not only gives to the angels, but he gets Yishmael involved. He says, let Yishmael also be involved in this chesed. He wants to train him. That's what's special about Avraham. It's what's on display when he takes care of the malachim, and it shows his superiority over the angels. Because angels don't have kids. Angels don't have progeny to train. And so in the beginning, I brought it to you in Source 20, in the beginning, it says that there were three men standing over Avraham, Nitzavim Alav. But in the end, it says, V'hu omeid aleihem. Avraham is standing over them. Avraham has demonstrated what makes him superior, and in the end, why Hashem will select his descendants to receive the Torah. That's why we get the Torah. And that's why the Malachim have to give it up when Hashem points out what Avraham did. Not that Moshe isn't wonderful and worthy, but the point is the demonstration that the Jew is the one who takes the Torah and passes it on, who takes chesed, practices it, and passes it to the next generation. And Ruth carries the same message. It's a story of chesed as we already saw. And Ruth has personal parallels to Avraham. Think about Lech Lecha Me'artzecha Mimolatecha Mibeis Avicha, right? Leave your home, your land, your ancestors, and all that. And look at Source 21, where Boaz says about Ruth, I know how you left your father and mother in the land of your birth. It went to a nation you did not know yesterday and the day before. So there are clear parallels between Avraham and Ruth. But more than that, it's about passing the lessons of chesed to our descendants. Elimelech's children learn from him to abandon others and run to Moab. And they're a dead end. Ploni Almoni's name is blotted out for his lack of chesed. But Ruth and Boaz demonstrate aid to others, and so each generation is listed there, leading to David HaMelech. Again, because we're stuck for time, may we merit to receive the Torah of Chesed on Shavuos, and please come back next week for the next part of the series. Thank you.